So next, we're going to get some real education from Patrick Chu, who's going to tell us about Chinese naming. And so when you're searching for names of your ancestor, this is going to be really, really useful.
So let's take a look here. I'm going to start off by saying, why am I going to talk about names? Names, obviously, we've kind of seen, especially from Amy's most recent talk, as well as Henry's and Tony's, everybody else's, names are going to be something that we latch onto, that we're looking for. Normally people think, oh, names are primarily about people. Sure, not only people, but me sitting over there at that one table, we're also going to be talking about names of places. And there's more. So obviously there's a lot to talk about. Blah, blah. Let's go. I'm going to start off with a question for all of you guys, and I'm sure you all know about Chinese names already, right? Who here doesn't know about Chinese names? Okay, a couple hands. That was a rhetorical question. I know there's a lot of stuff anyway. But when you take a look at the slides on your own, there are two links here. I've put up falsehoods programmers believe about names. I work in IT. I work with a bunch of North American, usually monolingual software developers who think, oh, well, you know, we create all of this software, and, you know, names, we don't have to worry about it. They're all the same all around the world. No, they're not. These are some fun links that you can take a look at. I've pulled out three examples from this the list that they have here, and I'm just going to read through them just to kind of get you to think about this. So number one, people have exactly one canonical full name. How many of you believe you have one canonical full name? Thank you. Oh, there's a person who here. She says she has only one canonical full name. Okay, great. Okay, number two, people have exactly N names for any value of N. So it's like, all right, they only have X amount of names. How many of you believe that? Okay, good. Don't raise your hands. Okay, people's names change, but only at certain enumerated sets of events. That means that they're only like a couple of times that it'll ever change in your life. How many of you believe that? One person believes that. Okay, well, I'll tell you, those are all fallacies. Anyway, let's move on and see. So I'm going to talk to you about, you know, some basics. I'm going to try and rush through this. People names, the structure of them. We're going to talk about lineage names. We're going to talk about place names. We're going to kind of get to dialects. And then hopefully I can get to all of the caveats and gotchas that you're going to have to look out for. All right, so basics. Anthroponyms, fancy name for names of people. Okay, so the structure of a Chinese name. Most everybody here says they know what a Chinese name is. All right, so we know that it's divided into usually two parts. You've got, just like in English, a first name and a last name, right? But we don't say first and last because why? Surnames, family names, are usually put first, and then your given name is after your surname. So I don't use first and last, it's opposite. I'll use surname and personal name. And then if we're talking about your personal name, there could be two parts to it, which may be a generation name and then an individuating name, or it could just be a single character. Okay, so one thing to remember, surname, given name, right? Surnames can be one to two characters. Personal names, given names that is, can be one to two characters also. All right, so let's talk really quickly about surnames. Historically, there are about 4,000 to 6,000 different surnames that have been recorded. Currently, only about 1,000 are so-called common or prevalent. And there are a number of various origins of how these surnames have come up. They could have been named after, you know, ancient nation-states. Could be all about, you know, what you see out in nature, topographical features, like, say, for instance, a river. Some may have been from titles, occupations, even kinship terms, animals, directions, and elements. Now, this here is a lot of writing. It's the top 10 populous surnames in China right now. They're all single characters. Currently, the biggest, the most populous surname is Li. Mandarin is Li. How many here are Lis or have Li background? Ooh, not as many. Okay. How many are kings? Wang. Oh, a couple. Not too many. And how about Zheng or Zhang? Okay, couple. All right. So those are the top threes. You can see some of the populations of these. All right, they're all single characters. We assume, because we see so many of them that are single characters, last names are usually only one character. However, there are also two-character last names. Okay, there is a book, historical book, called the 100 Surname, 100 Family Surnames, and it is actually more than 100. There are 444 compound surnames that have been documented historically. They're much more rare. Out of that 100 Surnames book, surnames that are only one character, there are 408 of them, that's 85%, and the ones that have two characters, there are only 74 that are listed, that's only 15%. It's relatively smaller, right? Now, all of these surnames, especially the ones that are compound, two characters, you can usually tell where somebody's from because they're kind of clustered geographically. How many people here know any Aoyangs? A couple of them, right? Usually Aoyangs are southern, Cantonese, Fukienese. I put that up there just because it's, you know, relatively easily seen. Just like also Sito, Luhu. Anybody know any Sitos? Or Suhu, Luhu. Very much also a southern surname. You'll see it primarily only in Guangdong area, especially in Huipeng. Okay, now, does anybody here know of a Duanmu or Dunmo, Wanbo? Okay, so most people here have it. Duanmu is actually a very, very common compound surname, but it's very common around the Shanghai area. That's probably why most people here haven't heard it, because it doesn't seem like there are too many Shanghainese here. And we get a couple other ones, but let's go on. Oh, so if I said one to two characters is usually the limit for surnames, what happens when there's more? What happens when you see a surname that has three characters or four characters? Anybody ever seen a Japanese last name written in Chinese characters? It goes on, right? It's usually, if you see more than two characters, it's not Chinese itself. So Japanese, you can go up to, I believe, three characters for a last name. Now, if you can see at the bottom on the right-hand corner, there's a surname that has four characters. In Mandarin, Aixingjuo. Okay? Aixingjuo. That is actually a Manchu surname. And it is the surname of the last of the ruling family of the last dynasty in China. So, like, you know, the last emperor, Puyi, that was his last name. Four characters long. All right, so surnames, I'm just going to give you a little bit more of the same stuff. You can break them up into four kind of categories. One is the most common, then there's also common, and then uncommon, but not so bad, and then rare. The way that this has usually been sort of like categorized is by how many people you have in the surname. So easy examples like Wong, King, Li, Zheng, and Lao. Over 1.2 million people at least for those surnames, right? The next one you go down, they're less. There's either, you know, at the highest mark you got 1.2 million or 120,000. That's not that many people, right? And there are a couple of they're less common. Then you actually have other surnames that are even smaller, 120,000 to only 12,000 people per the surname, and then even rarer are, you know, under 12,000. And actually, we have the next speaker. Her surname, I think, actually is one of these either uncommon or rare ones. So just wait for that. So I kind of hinted at, you know, geographical distribution about surnames when I was talking about the compound surnames. What's actually interesting is that here are two examples of two pretty common last names, Li and Chen, whichever you want to say. If you take a look at the left image, right, Li, okay, we assume, especially here amongst our Pearl River Delta surnames, we think we've got a whole bunch of Lees. Lees, Chans, Wongs, right? If you take a look at that map on that left, though, if you look at where the highest concentration of Lees are throughout the country, they're up in the northeast, sort of east central area, and then all the way down in the southwest. Yeah, down where Pearl River Delta, Hong Kong, Guangdong is, there are quite a few, but it's not as prevalent. However, if you look at the image on the right-hand side, for Chan, Xin, you know, Dan, you can see that Chans are all clustered primarily in the southeast of the country. We'll get back to that later. And I took, basically, it was kind of an interesting thing. This is not something that is very easily seen. It's a lot of writing. You're like, it's in Chinese. I can't read this. I'm a Zhuxing. What does this mean? So what this does here is it shows for each province in China, you know, like what the top 10 surnames are. And what is actually interesting is actually you can see basically like, you know, where do you see kind of clusters and patterns of who's what, right? Who's got the top thing? So all the way on the left-hand side, you know, the king, Wong, as, you know, the top dog, the most populous, are all of those provinces over there in that left table who have Wong as the first, and then either Li or Chang as the second. Okay, that's neat. Whatever. Now I'm going to go all the way over here to the right-hand side, where the bluish ones are. And top dog is either Chan or Wong, okay? And then second top dog can either be a Li, Lim, or Wong. Okay, maybe. Kind of neat. You can sort of see these clusters. Then you got this green one down there. Li is a top dog, rather than Wong or Chan. And then you've got some of these other mix for the second. And then that middle top one, kind of a hodgepodge. All of this, you're like, whatever, I can't read it. It's tables. Meh. However, if you take a look at this on a map, which I hurriedly tried to put together for you guys, the orange table, you can see that, where is it? Where are all the oranges? They're all up north. The greens are kind of like down in the southwest, middle south. And then the bluish, purplish ones are all down on the sort of like southeast coast. What that goes to show is that, you know, you sort of see distinct patterns in terms of surnames, where you can find them. Somebody says, oh, you know, this is my last name. You're like, oh, are you from this kind of area? And then you can kind of go from there. This kind of helps if you're looking for stuff. We already kind of know where we are from our own personal histories. But when people who don't necessarily know, you know, hey, helping them out, this gives you kind of a leg up. All right. So we just talked about surnames. Anybody got any questions about surnames? Yes, sir.
Were you able to overlap the dialects
on the surname? We'll get to that in the caveats. there is some of this, yes. All right. So we just talked about surnames. We're now going to go on to personal names. I split surname versus personal names. Surnames are our family names, right? Personal names are the not surname part. It's the second, usually, portion out of those two. And a personal name can be consisting of a generation name and an individuating name, okay? Or it could be a reduplicated name. Anybody know any friends named Bobo or Lili or something like that? Usually, they're girls that have the duplicated names. And sometimes, especially for those who are in the north, you can have just a single character for your name. They got rid of all the other stuff. All right, so let's go down and let's break down the personal individual name bits. Generation names. Okay, so generation names, I'm going to tell you right now. The rubric is that what it means is it's a shared name based on time depth to a certain degree, okay? And usually in the structure of things for Chinese names, you're going to go from your most general, the largest bit first, which is your surname. Second one is going to be the next one, generation. It kind of narrows it down a little bit. And then from within your generation, you go down to your individualness, the most specific, which is kind of like, you know, it's a very, very typical sort of Chinese thing. Most general to most specific. As opposed to, say, for instance, like your English name, right? You go, oh, my name is Patrick, and, okay, there are a gajillion Patricks, but my last name Chu, you're assuming that it is even more so, right? So it's sort of flip-flopped. All right, so generation names are shared by people in the same lineage and the same generation. So again, we said time depth, but now I'm also saying that you have to basically be in the same lineage to have that. Traditionally, they're only given to guys, and usually these are pulled from a generation poem. Now, I'm going to give you sort of a little side note. This is a caveat that I didn't put in a separate slide. Some families and lineages actually distinguish your birth name versus a so-called established name in terms of having, you know, generation names. And then some, you know, families also include females having, you know, a generation name, a shared one. Anybody here remember who Chiang Kai-shek's wife was? Song Meiling, right? Okay, she had two other sisters. Anybody remember what their names were? Ailing, and I think it was Meiling, right? So they all shared, they shared the Ling bit. Okay, so I just mentioned generation poem. This is a lot of words here. So main thing, look at the underlines. Usually generation poems, they give you a mnemonic function. They can be from a dozen characters up to a hundreds of characters. But the main thing is that each successive character becomes the generation name for successive generations. Why do you need this? You need to be able to basically tell who is senior and who is junior, right? So we're talking about generations. I said generation name, it's time depth, and it's all about, you know, like you're shared on that same level. You're looking at hierarchy. All right, so I'm going to show you what a generation poem kind of looks like. Sorry that the image is kind of bad. This is a photocopy of a handwritten book. And what I wanted to show was that, you know, usually lineage books will include this in the beginning of their sort of prefacing bits. This one here happens to be my own family's generation poem. It's Jiao, Zhao. And the claim is that we're descended from, you know, the royal family of the Song dynasty. Now, interestingly enough, what I want to show you here is at the top, this first line, all these Chinese characters, blah, I can't read them, right? You're Chuxing. You can't read them. That's okay. The main thing is that you can see how long this is. It's actually quite long. And you notice there's no punctuation. So this is a poem, but there's no punctuation. Classical Chinese doesn't use punctuation. Right underneath it, putting in semi-modern punctuation just to kind of break things up, sort of give you an idea of where things are. That's what it looks like. And I just wanted to sort of point out that that one poem encompassed the whole of three lineages, actually. It is a composite poem. Because the family is supposedly so big, and there are particular head ancestors that you needed to split them out, there were three brothers, and they split them, that same poem, into three versions. Okay, so there's a branch one, branch two, and branch three. Why do you do this? Again, like I said earlier just a minute ago about why do we have generation names and how the ordering is important. It's about who's senior and who's junior. That means who's top dog, who can you kick around, who gets more, you know, food from the ancestral rites, or who has to, hey, you, go get me a cup of tea. Sort of those sort of things to sort of be able to say who's higher on the totem pole and who's lower on the totem pole. If you take a look at it, not only do we see the time depth within, say, for instance, branch one, you've got who's going to be older or who's going to be senior and who's going to be junior, regardless of chronological age. You're going to see who's junior and senior. But even between the branches, that's when you also have to sort of say, oh, branch one is more senior to branch two and branch three, etc. So even if you're where you are in your own branch could be the same thing. Oh, we're the same number character in each of our branches. Oh, but which branch are you? Oh, you're number one. Oh, I'm number three. Oh. So these are sort of the things, these are the things that traditionally these have been used for. Okay? All right, so now we're going to go on away from the generation bits and we're going to get a little bit more specific. Individual names, individuating names. So we've gone from the largest, the clan, the family name. Then we've gone to the shared time depth-wise, generation, and now we're on to the individual. Individual names. You know, so we said generation names are shared by people in the same lineage and the same generation. Obviously, what does an individual name do? It individuates you. Really simple. Any questions about that? No? Good. All right, lineage names. So you go, all right, so we've just talked about people. Why are you talking about lineages? Well, so we had just sort of brought up, you know, like my Chu, there were a bunch of lineage. There are three lines of these, right? Let's talk a little bit about terms first. There are a lot of things that we're going to, I'm not even going to talk about these too much, but for reference, there are, you know, places, there's a word that we talk about where the surname supposedly originated from, okay? Then we're going to talk about even hall appellations, like the, where people actually clustered to do ancestral rites. Then there are other things that you'll hear bandied about nowadays, especially in modern times, like this word, 祖籍, or 祖籍 in Mandarin, where it's like, oh, okay, well, hey, we think that means, oh, that's where your ancestors are from. Well, it depends on who you're talking to. If you're talking to somebody from the mainland, it's actually your father's birthplace. If you're talking from someone in Taiwan, it may actually mean where they came from in the mainland, if they had moved over. There's also this other word, 籍贯, which, depending on who you're talking to again, it's where your grandfather was when you were born, not when he was born. So it can get very confusing. And there are other things that you say, hey, my hometown or my original village, blah, 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 blah. We're not going to talk about that. But Lees, how many Lees did we have in here again? Or stuff with Lees? All right. So Lees, in the so-called origins, there are supposedly 14 different places where lineages of Lees have come from. Everyone goes, hey, aren't all Lees from the same one Lee guy? Well, supposedly, no. There are at least 14 different originating stories, just because they may have gotten the name differently. Now, theoretically, you're like, well, okay, great. So each of those lineages has their own hall that they call themselves by. Nope. So we had 14 originating places, but there are only 8 halls that people kind of like claim to be going to. Don't they match one-to-one? Or maybe they're kind of like, you know, some of them, two origins will go to the same one. Well, not quite, because some of them actually mismatch. In addition, you go from those halls. So again, we're talking about from the biggest thing, you have a surname. Narrow it down to, you know, originating place. Then you're going to narrow it down to a hall. And even amongst halls, you actually have even branches that you split. So for those of you who are from San Francisco, how many are from San Francisco or have San Francisco heritage and are a Lee? So, okay, Kathleen, there are two. What's really kind of interesting is that in San Francisco especially, and I want to use this as an example, is that there are two Lee family associations. One of them, well, there's one big one, and then there are two separate halls. And what they do is they trace back to a different ancestor in Toisan itself. And sort of the way that it's described is country mouse, city mouse sort of distinction. So the Lees that are closer to Toisan City, Hoisian, they're the ones who are rich and more edumacated, and they have a bigger, more fancy hall. And then there are the country sort of Lees who were from not right by the district capital. And they were kind of looked down on. Thankfully, nowadays, with a consolidated modern 21st century organization, you know, in the consolidated sort of Lee family association, it almost always was the city Lees, city mice Lees, who were kind of like always in power. There are more of us, so we're going to be heads all the time. It was unfair. So now they switch off every term between the two. So again, notice there's this thing about hierarchy. Top dog, little dog, city mouse, country mouse. All of this naming stuff kind of traditionally has been used sort of like pecking order. So just kind of keep that in mind. All right, lineage names, I'm just going to gloss over this. they're often coming up in marriage stuff. You want to make sure you're not marrying your cousin, right? Blah. All right. Now, the next thing also is lineage names. If you have a family tree, sometimes they will be very, very specific, and they will tell you there's a lot of information that can be in there. Not only do you already know what your last name is, but it may actually tell you features like, where does this lineage claim to have a starting point geographically? It can actually sort of talk about what the lineage name, the hall name is, as well as, you know, like, where it might have been located at that point in time in history, as well as who is the dude who started this line. Now, we've just gone over people names. Anybody have any questions? No? All right. Next, let's go on to place names. Why are we going to talk about place names? Obviously, as a guy who's helping you look for your village, this is one of the reasons why I got to put this in there. Okay, so what I want to do is I want you to sort of think about, you know, like, what do people remember? Commonly remembered formats equal, okay, hey, I remember my district, and I know the name of a village, right? So we've just heard people rattle off, oh, I'm from Toisan, oh, I'm from Sunway, I'm from Hoiping, and then they give a village name, right? So say, for instance, I'm from Zhongshan Choimei Village. Some people actually, they skip the district, and they'll go down to a smaller sort of like more local sort of anchoring point, and say, for instance, like, they'll say, oh, I'm from Hoyin Salan. You're like, okay. This is kind of like saying, oh, hey, I'm from New York. Oh, New York? Where are you from, New York? I'm from Brooklyn. Okay. Brooklyn where? I'm from Cobble Hill in Brooklyn, in New York. So you can tell, you know, depending on who you're talking to, you're not necessarily going to give as much detail. So this is also sort of the same way. Or sometimes you can actually just go all the way down and just sort of say, I'm just from Long Kai. So when I was growing up, that's all I remembered. I mean, I knew eventually as I started to grow up, oh, we're actually from Toisan, and we're from Long Kai. All right, blah. Okay, this image here, you can look at it later, but what I wanted, the main thing about this one is that over time, the same word referring to some sort of administrative division, like, how many here know how to say district? What district are you from? Yuan. Yun. Xian, right? Okay, so interestingly enough, depending on the time period, it can refer to something completely different in terms of size and scope. Okay? So going from that top level in the Qin Dynasty way back, you know, BCE era, it was, you know, you had your nation, you had one down below it, a state, and then underneath the state, you had your county. That was just the second one. That was about it. Nobody cared about it. As you go down through time, you know, there's more geographical space that it covers, more people that it covers, and it starts to mean a smaller bit, and there are more layers in between. Does it match up with what we see now in terms of modern PRC sort of like administrative hierarchy? Not quite. So you can look at this later afterwards. Basically, one of the big things is if you have the most detailed bits, this is kind of like the hierarchy that you want to look for your village. You know your province, you know your district, you know your county/township, hamlet, traditionally, or administrative district, and then down to the village. Okay, so now we're going to talk a little about dialects, and this is just an overview. There are technically around 10 dialect families in China that are related to each other. This is a map of it. The brown is the Mandarin-speaking area, and you can see where the most number of dialects are on the southeast coast and a little bit inland. So these so-called dialect families, however, in Chinese, we just think of them as dialects, but they're actually even more divergent than modern European languages. So somebody speaking Mandarin, talking to somebody speaking standard Cantonese, is like somebody speaking German, talking to somebody who's speaking French, to a certain degree, right? And then even if we're talking about French, if you're coming from the Northeast up by the German border versus all the way down in the south, they sound completely different, and they don't even sound like somebody who's from Paris. Same thing with Chinese dialects. Since the majority of folk who come to these conferences are from the Pearl River Delta, I put up here, this is just Cantonese, okay? And there are 8 even dialect groupings amongst Cantonese. The largest ones that we talk about, Samyup, that is standard Cantonese, either in Guangzhou, Canton, or in Hong Kong, or Macau. And then there's also Zhongshan dialect that is technically a Samyup, even though historically we distinguish Samyup, Seyup, and then Zhongshan because it's complicated. And then Seyup or Shleyip is, you know, things technically we talk about Toisan, Hoipeng, Yanping, Sunmui. We all, however, know that there are even more distinctions between them. Okay, so that's a brief overview. Now let's get into the meat of things. Caveats and gotchas. So, remember when I was talking about, you know, you can only have one. This is not Highlander. This is, like, totally opposite of the Highlander movie. You can actually have more than one of something, historically especially. In Chinese, there is a combo word, a compound word, sing si, composed of two things, a sing and a si. Usually, nowadays, in modern language, it just sort of means surname, or it can mean clan. It means the same thing. It sort of, they both mean together a family name. However, you know, way back in the day, before the Han Dynasty, anybody know when the Han Dynasty was? Well, let me just sort of say, this is BC era, okay? The Seng actually sort of like referred to, you know, your mother's side. It was a matrilineal thing. Why? How do we know that? There's actually the woman, and, well, the word Seng is comprised of woman and then birth. So what it meant was, who were you born from? And it traced on your mom's side. The oldest so-called surnames, all of them actually had the woman character in them. So you can take a look at that later. The other one, the clan, it's on the guy's side. It told you what tribe you came from. Can you have more than one? Yes. So who here knows who Wang Dai is? The Yellow Emperor. Everybody should put their hands up. I mean, Henry talked about the guy. Come on. Anyway, so he has a common name, Wang Dai, Yellow Emperor, right? He actually had two sings. How? I don't know. He didn't have two mothers, but somehow or another, there are two sings that were associated with him. And as far as the tribe, the father side that he came from, supposedly, obviously he only has one father, but there are a whole bunch that are listed. So even by the time Wang Dai was around, you can have multiple affiliations. That means not a one-to-one. Okay, now, can surnames change? Yes, they can change. People do change their last name. I'm going to give you an example here from the Song Dynasty. Again, the surname of the royal family, Ziu Zhao, right? Why would they have changed their name? Well, okay, so as the royal family of the dynasty that came right before the Mongol invasion, what happened? The Mongols came in, they started taking over the country. Holy crud. They have to run, they have to escape, they have to make sure that people don't know who they are. Why? Because the Mongols were coming around. What's your last name? Oh, you got the same last name as the royal family? You're gone. All right, so one branch, you know, they fled and they're like, oh my gosh, gotta get away. They changed their last name to the name of the dynasty, Song, just so that they can, you know, like, retain sort of like that relation. Another one, who knows why they changed it to this one, they changed it to Guat, Ge. And then, even then, they changed it once again to Zhu, Lo Ji. Who knows why? But it's been recorded that they're like, oh yeah, we're Ji's, but we were originally Guat. Oh, but we were originally Jiu. Okay. Then another one, same thing, another branch changed it to Ga. After, you know, returning to the founding emperor's kind of hometown, it sounds like the word fake. So they went back and they knew it. They changed it to a name so that they said, oh, this is our fake name. It's called Paper Names, OG style. Okay, generation name caveats. So what was my original rubric about generation names or the structure of generation names? Where is it normally found? It's normally found in the second position. Surname, biggest, right? Then down to the next, you narrow it down a little bit as a generation name, narrow it down even further as an individual name. Some families actually, however, swap it off. This here is an example of one family, a Wong family, and usually you're looking for common characters, guys who have the same common character. So if you look at generation number one, G1, right? You look and you go, oh, well, there's a surname, but the second spot has two different characters. Oh, maybe they're not related. Oh, but you go to that last one, and they share the same character. Oh, okay, well, that's kind of weird. Okay, so they put it at the end instead. They're kind of confused, right? They're a little crazy. Then you go down to the next generation, second generation, and you go, okay, well, I'm expecting that second character to be completely different. Nope. It's the same character. And then, you know, the third position is actually that distinguishes them. Oh, well, that's kind of weird. Maybe they just decided to flop it just for that, just between the two. But then if you go down to the third generation, you can see there are three brothers. Their shared character is again in the last position. This family, what they do is every generation, they switch back and forth. Is this consistent? For this family, it is. For other families, not necessarily. Okay, another thing to watch out for is, and what do I always say about generation names? It's about pecking order, right? So not only do generation names have pecking order kind of like built into them, but even individual names can have things sort of like built into them too. So large lineages, you know, they have to use innovative hints to sort of tell amongst people in the same generation even, like, how do I tell that who's older, who's younger, who's more senior, who's not? So if you take a look at these, they're at the top of the tree, you can see two fathers. They share the same character. But then, you know, they bred like mad and they had a whole bunch of kids. Well, not really. I mean, there are three listed and the four listed. They all share the same generation character. Okay, that's kind of easy to see. But the interesting thing is to look at here is that the guys on the left, their individuating characters share a same character component. Okay, and it's written at the bottom in red, the word for son. And the one on the right-hand side, they share a character component, the word for wood or tree, and that's in red too. Now, why do you do this? Again, it's kind of to remember who is on the pecking order. So there is this, there's kind of like this old sort of, pattern of, you know, the planets and the five elements to sort of like say which one goes in order of which. And it goes usually the sun, the moon, fire, water, wood, metal, and earth. Okay? So what does that tell you? Oh, all these guys, they share the sun. That's the first position. Oh, these guys on the right-hand side, they sure would. Okay, they're a little further down. So who's more senior if you look at it? The guys on the left with the sun have a higher ranking than the ones with the wood. So again, you'll kind of notice these patterns sometimes in particular family trees when you're looking at them. If you do see it, you'll kind of understand why is it that all of them all of a sudden share the same thing in their characters. It's because it's all about pecking order. All right. One-to-many relationship. We talked about, hey, can you only have one? And I said, we've said before, even with surnames, we've seen examples of, you know, it's anti-Highlander. You can have more than one. I'm going to tell you that you're individual people, even until the 20th century, you can have more than one name. So if you look at here, there are 8 different categories that I've just listed here. Where this person had 7 different examples, and I gave an extra example for the temple name. He doesn't have a temple name, but yeah. Okay, so the bit about, you know, this red line, it's where you are in life. When you're born, you can get a milk name, a birth name.
You can have an official name, you have a registry name, courtesy name that people know you outside of the family. You have a pseudonym, another nickname, and, you know, an altered name, depending on the use. This happens to be all of the names for Sun Yat-sen. He had more than, well, he had eight categories, and obviously there are more than each of them. So Sun Yat-sen had eight categories. Got yelled at, well, I didn't get yelled at, but somebody wrote a scathing article in Chinese after the conference two times prior, kind of ragging on Sun Yat-sen. If he had more than one name, you can't trust a dang thing he said. He's not telling you his real person. Well, historically, people can have even more than nine different types of names. This one here, take a look. How many are there? There's more than nine categories. And even in each category, there could be more names that this person's referred to. This happens to be a very, 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 very famous poet from, I think he was in the Tang Dynasty. Okay, so we've kind of mentioned some of these things. This is a cute meme that I found. A lot of times you're going to see these in immigration records, especially when you've come over. We're starting to move into tangible stuff. This is an example of a father and a father's father, where there's a guy named Robert Fai A Zheng, right? But his Chinese name is Zheng Yu Fai. You're like, that's kind of weird. So obviously the immigration person was really, really smart and goes, oh, Chinese names are backwards. Okay, so I know the first thing is going to be his last name, so I'm just going to flip the whole thing. So Robert Fai A, he was A Fai when he moved over, okay? So Robert, he says, what's your name? Zheng A Fai. Okay, I'm going to order it all the way backwards. So Robert Fai A Zheng. His dad also was Zheng Ji On. Moved over, he was known as Zheng A-on. All right, so use of A is actually kind of like a sort of like a nicknaming sort of thing. It's a diminutive. It's like, where's Richard? Well, Richard's in the room somewhere. What's if you know Richard really well, what's another name you'd call him? Rick. Oh, well, let's use Rick. Let's not use the other name. All right, so we might call him Rick, and then if you know him even better, like your BFFs, you might call him Ricky, right? This is kind of like what ah is used for. So in some social contexts, however, you associate this with being unmarried. One, because it's a birth name that you're going to use this for. It's very informal. And then Henry has also mentioned before that, you know, because you're unmarried, you're kind of looked down on. And so if you see somebody with an ah in it, just kind of keep that in mind. Why do I bring this up? Ahs get kind of used and reinterpreted. So there is this guy. His name is Yu Dai. And, you know, he moved over. He immigrated to Hawaii. Yu A Dai. A Dai, right? And then that A Dai became A Tai. His family, it became his last name, his surname. There is an author, Lani A Tai Farkas. Her sister, Doreen Atai. Gender inequality. People have been asking about, you know, gender inequality. Yes, usually females are not recorded. Females do not usually share the official generation name. When you've gotten married, the married family, usually you will mark it only with your surname and then this marker that says clan. In immigration records, you'll always see the word she or si. So you'll see like Chu Shi, Qin Shi. That just tells, I mean, and they're going to write that, oh, their last name is she. No, it's not that their last name is she. They split it up thinking first name, last name. That's not quite the thing. So people have asked, hey, how can I track my grandma? How can I track a female? If you are lucky, there are these things that get exchanged between two families when you get married so that you can tell, oh, are they worth it? Or are there, you know, ragamuffins in it that we don't want them in our family? These red things, gangpu, they will list on both sides of the family, you know, the person who's getting married and at least three generations going up and where they're from. This example happens to be for my dad's mom, had no idea where she was from, had no idea what her male relatives were. It listed it all out, so now Next time I go to China, I'm going to go look for them. But if you can find one of these, this will have all the information that you would probably ever need if you're going to find a female relative. Okay. Place names can also have more than one. Okay, so who here knows Beijing? Everybody should have raised their hand here. All y'all falling asleep? Why? What's the other name for Beijing? The older name? Peking. Or if you're Cantonese, Peking, right? And even before that, it used to be called Beiping in Mandarin, Bukping. All things, you can have it. Some of the things that you'll note later, we can talk about this afterwards. Even within, you know, current human memory, name places can change. Multiplicity. I'm actually going to give you an example here, especially because I'm doing villages. You can actually find within the same district up to, you know, 15 different villages that have the same name. So Lori back there, she's waving. She was like, hey, can you help me find my village? My village is Qinben, right? Okay, that should be pretty easy. Oh, by the way, I also have a gravestone. Can you really find that one? So we went and I looked at it. I'm like, all right, got it. Okay, we found one side first, her mom's side. And then we were going to look for this second one, the Qinben. Her mother's side was all the way up on the top of the district. And then the one that we saw from the gravestone, all the way down at the bottom. All right, you're looking. Okay, it's on a map. It's top to bottom. Fine. Maybe they could walk it. That, I believe, is a 30-hour walk. And then so we were talking about this, and then Lori goes, but wait a minute. No, I remember hearing stories that when, you know, so-and-so passed on, the other family just walked across the bridge and made sure to bring food. So that meant that it was actually a lot closer. It's not going to be, I mean, you're bringing food almost every other day. You're not going to walk 30 hours, are you? No. So what we had to do is we actually had to go closer to the other village that we knew where it was to look for the same village name that we saw down before. The gravestone was wrong. Okay, so that gravestone was wrong. You got to watch out. And so underlying things like what Amy has said, what Tony has said, and what Henry have said is family stories are really, really key. So dialects, right here I have some examples for dialect differentiation. So usually you're just going to sort of like talk to somebody before you write their name. Not everybody has a name tag on them. And even if they have a name tag, it's not necessarily going to show the Chinese characters, right? Because we're all juxing, right? You can't read, you can't write. So if I say the name Fong, right? Or hey, I'm Ryan Fong. Well, there are two possibilities. Which one could it be? In Cantonese, you know, there's a differentiation between Kuang and Fong, but in Hoisan, Hoihen, they're both Fong. Same thing. You just say it and you're like, I don't know which one you are. Got to watch out. Joe, do we have any Joes here? Hey, Ed. So he's a Joe, right? That's very Mandarin style reading of it. Hakka would be Jiu. Cantonese would be Zhao. Joe, he says, oh, my last name is Joe. In my last name, in some dialects in Toisanwa, it's Zhou. And you're like, are you my Joe or are you a different Joe? You got to find out. Going through this, the thing is that what's the takeaway? Chinese characters are canonical. Trust the character rather than necessarily what you hear, because dialects are going to pronounce the same thing very, very differently. This is another example here where it's just written, where I list a whole bunch of dialects and systems of writing just because they're very, very different. Now, we just talked about between different dialects. How many people here have a Hoisan or a Hoipeng background? Quite a few of you. Okay. So even then, I'm going to go back to Amy's first talk where she says, oh, when she was talking to this uncle guy or this guy at the Qin Family Association, you said you're from Aiwan, but you talk like you're from Wanfuan. 2 miles apart, there are differentiations in terms of how you pronounce things. There are a whole bunch of different ways of pronouncing it throughout just even the district. How many here know how to say lion? Do you know what a lion is? In Toisan. C级, how many people say 路都? Okay, two, three hands. How many people here say 李基? Nobody, okay. How many people here say 此地? Nobody, okay. Well, depending on where you're from, so 路都 is the problem. How many people here say 好我 for a whole bunch, a lot? 好我, okay, so couple. How many say 好我? Couple more. How many of you say 好我? There you go. So, notice, whole bunch of different hands for the same phrase. Okay? Now, taking this to the next level is that because of all of these different pronunciations, even for the same district, think about this. We kind of have enough context that we can kind of figure things out. You're coming off a boat, and this white guy comes up and he goes, "What's your name?" Oh, 阿角. He's all, "What?" This is an example here of, you know, romanization, transcription, sort of like differences. This came from a Canadian sort of brochure research that just recently came out. And this one town, Baksa, has all of these examples on the right-hand side. Okay? And I want you to take a look at, even for the character white, Bak, how many different ones are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There are 15 of them. 15 different ways of writing the same sound, bak, depending on who's saying it. Some of them say bak, some of them say buck. Okay, don't know. Maybe the guy who was writing didn't know how to listen to it. He's like, "What?" All right, I'm just going to write down the closest thing I can think of. This is one of the things you got to watch out for when you're looking up, you know, immigration records. Amy's shown already, you know, it's like, there are different ways of writing things all over the place. Just be very flexible, be very sort of like elastic, and kind of like go, well, let's do a fuzzy search. Do it, think in your own mind how other people could write